Welcome to the MedConceptions podcast, a podcast about leading a healthy and more mindful life. This is our first mobile podcast venture, let's call it that. And I'm very glad to be here today with Nicholas Hukwe. So I'll say a bit about what Nicholas does. And so Nicholas Hukwe is an award-winning graduate who qualified from the British College of Osteopathic Medicine with a distinction in his master's in osteopathy. And he has a keen interest and has published work in gait and posture. How are you doing, Nico?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm so glad we finally managed to do this.
Yeah.
It was a long After process. Some time. Yeah, it turns out it's difficult to set up your own.
It was okay. It's been okay. Managed.
Let's start with you telling us a bit about what osteopathy is and what you do exactly.
Yeah, so osteopathy, it's a difficult question. I remember coming to the end of my master's and a lecturer came into the hall and he said to me, well, he said to the group of people that were there who were about to graduate, he said, who could put their hand up and say what osteopathy is? And none of us could put our hand up after 4 years. So I'll try and come up with a synopsis of what it is. Basically, it's manual therapy. It's very similar to physiotherapy and chiropractic medicine. Basically, what it involves is effectively you're looking at the body from a perspective of function. Mm-hmm. So how does this body work? Structurally, you're looking also at the body. We know the anatomy, and therefore when you know the anatomy and also you put the function together, you then get a picture. And then you try and work out from that picture, how can I help this person who's presenting with symptoms? Now, it's a fully regulated profession. Mm-hmm. No one can call themselves an osteopath in the UK unless they've done a master's degree. But it practically involves stretching, involves manipulations where necessary. It also involves advice. And in a nutshell, that's basically what osteopathy is. What it would look like if, for example, you were to come and see an osteopath. Mm-hmm. For example, you'd probably expect them to do a case history, mm-hmm. just like a doctor, maybe a bit more in depth just to get to know the patient and because we have the benefit of time. So we would do a case history, then examine the patient, see how the body moves. Then from there, we'd get the patient to lie down and examine them passively. After you've done active assessment, you do passive assessment. And then from there, you then explain to the patient, this is what I think's happening, where things aren't working so well, where areas aren't moving so well. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you would try and treat that patient if it's safe to do so. And, you know, then you would basically advise any sort of self-care exercise, as I said before. But effectively, That's what a treatment looks like when you see an osteopath. But yeah.
How long does all this process take? From the time, like, let's say a patient comes in, like you take a history and...
Well, it depends on what clinic you work at. So different clinics have different timings and different patients book different appointment slots. So mm-hmm. you can have an hour session with an osteopath and that could be consultation and treatment. Or it could be a half an hour consultation and treatment. Mm-hmm. The osteopath just has to adapt. You have to learn to adapt.
What's the most common, let's say, things that you see in the clinic?
In the clinic, the most common complaint, mm-hmm. well, presenting complaint is lower back pain, I would say. Where I work, at least.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know lower back pain, it's something that, it's a presenting complaint, as you said, with many of your patients. And it's also like it's out there with students as well, because especially now with the online lessons, like
especially during COVID, there's been a lot of
people
sitting and working from home at terrible workstations.
Students, but especially older people as well.
Yeah, we've seen a big increase in patients coming seeking help during with these times. Yeah, with lower back pain, especially because of the current pandemic.
What about cervical pain? Does that
cervical pain? Yeah, you get that a lot. I mean, it really does. You may see like maybe 10 people with cervical pain in one day. But every day is different. That's what's great about the profession. You haven't got like the same patients coming in every day. Mm-hmm. Well, you'd hope you wouldn't. Otherwise, it just would be boring. But cervical pain is very common as well due to the current advancements in technology. We've got our phones, our tablets. Everything is promoting forward head posture. And, for every millimeter that the head goes forward, we increase the compression in the lower neck by 10. So for every millimeter. So that's quite considerable because you...
By tenfold.
By tenfold, yeah. And you will see actually in the lower segments of the spine that there's increased wear and tear there just because the head's gone forward. So we need to be really mindful day to day just by bringing the chin in and just trying to sit up straight and bring the phone to you. Don't bring yourself to the phone.
Yeah, I was gonna get exactly to this. Some practical tips that you can tell us. Let me just straighten your mic a bit.
Yeah,
get it there. That's better. Anyway, what other like practical tips would you advise for lower back pain as well?
So practical tips for lower back pain. It depends what the pain is and what the diagnosis is. So not all lower back pain is the same.
Mm-hmm.
There's different structures in the lower back. Each structure can get injured in different ways. So you can't really prescribe a set of exercises for all lower back pain. But some tips, let's say. An injury of the lower back where you, for example, ligamentous injuries, where you've been sitting excess period of time due to studying, you've got maybe a bit of slight discal irritation in your lower back, and because you've been stretching that disc by flexing forwards, let's say. For that sort of complaint, which is very common, you would probably recommend people to get up in the morning when the discs are nice and hydrated, bring your knees up to your chest. That's a great exercise to start to do. Lying on your back, really good just to hydrate the discs. Then you can do different exercises, bring the knees side to side. But this is really going into rehab.
Yeah.
But do you mean tips in terms of...
Let's say when I'm sitting down and I'm doing my work. Is this something?
The best thing to do is get up. not
frequent breaks.
Yeah, 45 minutes. I'd recommend you get up every 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
If you can, invest in a standing desk, because if you're a student and you're working from 90 degrees on a chair where your pelvis and lower back is at 90 degrees, then you're really asking for trouble because your core is becoming weak, and that's going to predispose to any sort of injury in the lower back. So really getting up as often as you can is going to be really beneficial for anyone.
I thought for myself as well, buying a standing desk, but I don't know, I'm just afraid that you get tired and you're going to want to sit down.
But the thing is, when you're studying and your mind is on the work, you don't think about how tired your legs feel. But having said that, you should ease into it. You shouldn't just go straight cold turkey from sitting all the time to standing all the time. I would ease into it. So just logical, I would start off with doing 2 hours of standing a day and then work up to a bit more until you're doing half and half, and then try and weigh it more to standing. It's not that you can't sit. It's excessive sitting, which is the problem, when you're sitting for long hours a day, and you know that really does just impact the discs and the facet joints of the lower back, and you'll see later on in life what damage you've done, and then it will be like, oh, my I've done this, now what? and that's when we see patients a bit later on, your accountants, etc.
And I'm sure it's not only problems in lower back as well, like it's also problems with eyesight, I'm guessing. But
yeah, so that's a big one. We always should ask, for example, when a patient says to me they've got neck pain, it's really important to ask, when was the last time you've got your eyes checked? Because that can be a reason why someone leans forward and not really be the reason why they're getting neck pain. It's actually because their eyes are well, they need glasses, effectively.
So basically, go check your eyes. And...
Yeah, definitely. You need to get your eyes checked. You need to get a good setup, get it all ergonomically fitted for you. And that's something osteopaths do. I really often recommend patients get a colleague to take a photo of you sitting at a desk, side on, different views, so that I can get an idea in clinic how you're sitting and spending your time for 9 hours a day, let's say, and then we can change that, get you standing, bring the keyboard closer, whatever it may be, bring the mouse closer, raise the screen so that it's not just eye level, but 3/4 of the screen should be from that. Basically, you want your eyes to be 3/4 of the way down from the screen so that then you can see. It makes you sit up, basically, because if it's just eye level, there is a tendency when you're looking down at the bottom of your screen to slouch, and you don't want that. You don't want at any moment of time to be slouching. You want to be always sitting upright, and that will promote that if you raise your screen up a bit higher.
That I didn't know. I thought always it has to be at eye level, but 3/4.
So basically, if you go 3/4 of the way down, so you've got only 1/4 left of the bottom of the screen, you want to get your eyes in line with that. And that's what I recommend. It tends to be good. If you're finding that you're looking up too much and you're getting a bit of neck pain, then just lower it.
Yeah.
That's typically what we recommend as self-care advice. That's what I was saying earlier when we were saying self-care advice is looking at what they do day to day, lifestyle, because that's really important. You can do the best treatment ever, but if the patient then goes back to work for 9 hours, 5 days a week, you're not going to get them better. You need to actually change the way they live their life so that they don't get themselves into the trouble they got themselves into. But yeah, that's a bit
It's a really good point what you just made, because it's the same like when you say with obesity, what happens there is people go on diets and people like they do a bypass or they do... And then after that, they still put on the weight. And the best thing for that is to change your lifestyle. I start exercising.
But it's difficult. It requires... Sometimes patients need to get to a really tough point. You know, they need to get to a point where they're desperate. Their pain has become too much. And unfortunately, patients come to us where we're thinking, maybe osteopathy may or may not help. We don't know, but we'll give it a go. And that's what I say to patients in those situations where they've come to us, and it's typically men. Men typically wait for things to be too far gone.
Take care of themselves more than men.
Yeah, they would naturally go to see a physician quicker than what a man would do with the same symptoms. Mm-hmm. But you have to basically know when to refer and when not to, basically.
That's another important question.
Yeah.
When do you know I have to refer this patient or I'm going to do harm now? This overpasses my capabilities, surpasses.
So it's about understanding your red flags and knowing them and learning them.
Yeah.
And it comes down to that. So red flags are basically, for those who don't know, are sort of symptoms which a patient may present with, which will make you want to refer them, because actually this may not be under the realms of osteopathy. This is more under the realms of, you know, going to the A&E or a hospital or seeing a doctor to investigate this further. And that's when you typically refer. For example, there are many conditions which can mimic back pain. They can be visceral related. And you need to be aware of that when treating, and you need to always ask yourself, is this that? Is this cancer? Is this anything? It can be anything. You need to always have that in mind without scaring the patient, of course, but you need to be asking these questions and being mindful all the time, you know, okay, is this what I think it is?
Yeah.
You know, and I remember a lecturer in my university, I keep going back to this, but he used to say, if it looks like a duck, it waddles like a duck, then it's probably a duck. because basically what he's trying to say is it's most likely going to be fine.
Yeah.
And if you think it's that, then it is probably that. But we're not really always sure. So you just always need to stand
double, triple.
Yeah, yeah. Check. Always check. Always check. Yeah. If you've got any feeling of like reluctancy to see a patient, then I think you should refer and there's no harm done. The patient may be a bit annoyed, but I
mean, what happens then? You know, you go to a patient or the patient comes to you and then you're like, red flag comes up, I can't see you.
Well, yeah, so
what happens to the patient's reaction?
Yeah, so it's always tough, and I always struggle with this at first in practice, because you kind of you get given a patient with, I don't know, who knows, it's at 4 o'clock at the end of your shift, let's call it your working day, and you're tired. Yeah. And then someone comes in, they say, I get blackouts. And yeah. You're like, why did you come to see me today? You're like, oh, for goodness sake. And I also get low back pain. And
you're like, please go to the A&E.
Well, you can't just do that. Because as a medical professional, you must always examine. Must always examine, unless it's really like urgent. Mm-hmm. This is what I would do, at least, is examine the patient.
Mm-hmm.
Just so that you can gain a bit more information and provide that for the next person who's going to see this patient.
Yeah.
And so I would always examine in most cases. And from there, I would then decide, okay, maybe you do a few clinical tests like a medic would. Like you may take their pulse, you may listen to their heart, whatever it may be. And then if things are sounding like, no, this is not MSK, this is for the doctors, then you refer. And the patient isn't happy. They're like, no, I'm in pain. I'm paying you to see you. You just have to ignore that and you have to be professional. You say, no, this is not for me to treat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it is tough. It's tough because, you know, you could probably just treat that patient and they'll be happy and they'll walk out the door. But is it in the best interest of that patient's health?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe not. And no, it definitely is not.
Yeah.
You know, and so... So you do need to be stern and listen to your gut, and you know, you have to be on your toes all the time. You can never have a bad day. You have to always be.
That's the thing with medical professionals, because you're dealing with people. Mm. It's like, oh, I screwed up this printer. Oh no, they're not gonna have. Is exactly. I screwed up this
yeah.
man?
Yeah, you can't.
Yeah,
literally, it costs.
That's why it's so important in like the medical professions and people that are dealing with people to take care of themselves.
Yeah. It's so tough. You need to constantly put yourself in their shoes. And also, it's about empathy, really. You need to really not let yourself slip up. And and you need to put all effort in understanding that patient, making sure that what you're treating is right. That's and you know, you can get lazy at times, but you need to snap out of that. You need to tell yourself off, because you can't afford that. You can't afford that. But yeah, you know, we are human and mistakes happen, unfortunately, but we try our best to minimize them.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Let's move on to something different. Could you explain to us what's the difference between a chiropractor, a physiotherapist, and an osteopath? Because there's...
I mean, it's the most common question we get asked even while treating patients. And it's difficult to answer because all our patients are more or less the same, most of them.
Mm-hmm.
So the patients that come to see us near enough can present with the same complaint.
Mm-hmm.
And typically patients do like pit stops at all three. They'll see a physio first. Typically this is what happens.
Yeah.
They see a physio first. They maybe will see a chiropractor, because for some reason chiropractors tend to get more publicity. Well, people know of them more. Osteopaths are less known. Just don't know why. They've been around the longest, but I don't know why.
I didn't know that. They've been around the longest.
Yeah, before physio and chiro. But but I think with chiro it's only 20 years, but it doesn't really matter. But they... Basically, the key difference between them is you basically have in chiro, what I know, look, I'm not a chiro or a physio, but I'm going to try and, this is what I hear from patients at least and what I've read. Mm-hmm. Basically, chiropractors tend to they tend to manipulate patients a lot more than what an osteopath or a physio would.
When you say manipulation,
I mean taking joints to end range, and then you hear that satisfying cracking noise.
Okay.
they tend to do that to the spine. Mm-hmm. And joints. It doesn't necessarily need to be the spine. It could be the lower extremity or upper extremity. But they tend to use radiography as well in their practice. So they try, and sometimes they may, well, they'll typically get a patient to come. They'll do a case history. They'll get you to have an X-ray. So they mm-hmm. expose you to radiation. And then they'll bring you out. They'll show you, look, this is where things are, they call them subluxations, where things are malaligned, mm-hmm. and they'll try and correct them, and then take another X-ray to see if there's a change. And mm-hmm. I don't think all chiropractors do that, but I know that this is a common practice mm-hmm. in this field. Physios, as we know, are very well known. A lot of their work is in NHS. They do also private work, but it's a lot to do with exercises, I feel. There are mm-hmm. some who do manual work, but I am stereotyping here to try and give some sort of idea about
clarification between them. Yeah.
And doctors will tend to refer to physio as the first mm-hmm. line of treatment for anyone complaining of any MSK issue.
Yeah. MSK?
MSK means musculoskeletal, okay. Sorry. Yeah. And so any... What was I saying? I lost my trail of thought. So, so they'll get referred to a physio, and then from there they would get exercises mostly. They'll be given a set of exercises, and then from there they would be reassessed and then pushed to do a bit more or mm-hmm. less, and just try and treat the issue through exercise and rehabilitation. Mm-hmm. Then osteopaths, as I've said, is basically, I like to see it as kind of encompassing both of those practices, mm-hmm. and also trying to understand the way in which we can treat the body in a way where we are promoting health. So it doesn't generally involve manipulation or exercises. Sometimes it may not involve either of those things. It may be just complete mobilization, soft work. Also, osteopathy also looks at different areas. It's a big subject, osteopathy. So it's not just looking at MSK necessarily. You can do visceral osteopathy. So that means working on the organs. You can do mm-hmm. osteopathy working on the organs. And you may ask, what are we doing there? Well, we're trying to promote health there. And how do you do that? You're feeling, for example, where there's restriction in an organ, because mm-hmm. that could be maybe due to IBS or any other sort of
inflammatory bowel disease.
Yeah, inflammatory. Oh, no, IBS is irritable bowel.
Irritable syndrome.
Oh. Yeah, yeah. IBD is.
You're right. Yeah,
but I might have confused you because we spoke about it earlier.
Yeah.
So you can get IBS symptoms, which you may feel like their small intestine isn't moving well, like the rest of their colon. And you can try and find an area of balance, and then just reassess and it moves better. And then the patient may say to you, oh, I feel a lot better in terms of my digestion.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's patients after osteopathy sometimes pass a bowel movement where they haven't been able to for many, many like days, you know, and that's like osteopathy speaking for itself. You know, you see the patients
have
immediate change. Yeah. And, you know, that's one area of osteopathy. You can do pediatric osteopathy, so working on children. You can do obstetric osteopathy, working on pregnant women. Mm-hmm. Geriatric, working on the elderly. And, you know, every branch has its own niche patients and niche areas of treatment. And, you know, that's why it's quite difficult to talk about osteopathy, because it's so, so broad.
That's a really good, I think you've painted a really good picture of what osteopathy entails.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's tough. It's tough. It's not easy.
Indeed. So I want to go to another question. Is there any evidence for osteopathy? It's a tough one, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I must say, obviously I'm new to the field of osteopathy, so I don't know loads and loads of research in the osteopathic field, but there is... There is an institution which is just driving osteopathic research, and they're trying to build it up a bit more, because it, unfortunately, it's been all anecdotal, and it's been recorded through books, and because it's very classical, and it's been, and slowly, you know, it's becoming more evidence-based. NICE guidelines have accepted it as helping in lower back pain. I mean, that was a big thing, that we're now recognized as allied health professionals. Mm-hmm. So now NHS is incorporating osteopaths in treatment. So we're not considered as alternative anymore. We're allied. So that's these are big changes, because slowly we're getting the evidence behind osteopaths. But the big problem with this is every osteopath doesn't become an osteopath to do research. They become an osteopath to help people and do the work in osteopathy, rather the actual hands-on work rather than the research. And it is tough, because I asked myself, could I go into research? I probably wouldn't do that, because I enjoy the work. I enjoy the
That's
the
why patients. You became an osteopath.
Exactly. Yeah. But this, and unfortunately, there's not enough people entering osteopathy to then do research, I don't think. But hopefully over, as osteopathy becomes more popular, hopefully more people will build up the research.
I was going to go to this, like, what's the future of, like, it, what does it entail for osteopathy? But I think you answered it now. Like,
what does the future entail? I mean, there's a massive scope of, like, area and field you can specialize into as an osteopath. Mm-hmm. You can really get really, you can find your niche, and it depends what each individual wants and aspires to do, you know, and it's really your choice, and which is quite nice, actually. You've got a lot of freedom to choose what you want to do. But what does the future bring? I think for osteopaths to have a better connection with the working in a team, I think that would that would be a lot better. I mean, it exists currently. It's just not so common. It's not such a
common
practice.
You mean in a multidisciplinary team with doctors and nurses and, like,
yeah,
in
for
the
example,
treatment of one person or
yeah, exactly. Where all can work in into one and feed that patient in the way promoting their health. Because unfortunately, I find that in the UK, things are quite fragmented and we're not getting cohesion. Cohesion will bring better healthcare. So I think that's basically where I can envisage.
Hopefully, where this is going.
Hopefully.
You can but be one of those people that bring the change.
Let's see.
We've talked about this over the phone. When people go from this state of, like, going on 9-to-5 work schedule, sitting on a desk, and then weekend comes, they're like, I'm gonna run 10 kilometers.
and then
bang, injury.
So basically, we call these people weekend warriors, because they suddenly jump. They've realized they've come to Friday, and it's a Friday night, and they're thinking, oh God, I've been sitting at a desk for 9 hours a day, five days this week, and I haven't done any exercise. I'm going to go for a run, 15-kilometer run on Saturday. And most people get away with it. Yeah. Most people will get away with it. And because the body has tolerance, it will tolerate that.
Yeah.
But the thing is, we need to remember, the body, in terms of the musculoskeletal system, it adapts. And I think, in actually thinking about what I've said, I think it does adapt in every system. But I can only speak for what I know. So it will adapt. So if you tell your body to sit the way we are now, and we do this for many hours, and we repeatedly do this for X amount of years, your tolerance to doing it, you'd think, should increase. Now, unfortunately, I don't think it does. When we talk about the discs and things like that, where the ligaments in the lower back, they become stretched and the wear and tear increases. Yeah. And what happens is, when patients, sounds like I'm going off on a tangent, but what happens is when people then decide to go for a run, what you've done is you've told your body to sit for so many years, for so much time throughout the week. Then you've literally said, no, I'm going to go and run now. And literally what that does is it creates a shock to the system. Yeah. The body doesn't naturally have that core strength to run because the core has become, it's gone on holiday effectively, sitting at a desk.
Yeah.
And, you know, try moving with no core. You can't really.
Yeah.
No one actually loses their core completely. But what I'm saying is your core stability decreases and declines as we sit at 90 mm-hmm. in this position.
Yeah.
And as you then go for a run, the mechanics in the pelvis, the lower limb, the knee, the ankle all become out of balance.
Yeah.
Completely. And, you know, we get rotations just to try and create some level of stability. And you're asking for trouble. You're literally asking for trouble. So what I would recommend is rather than going for big, long runs, go for a shorter run, mm-hmm. but more regularly, rather than doing big bouts of exercise. Frequency is what the body likes, high frequency. So running twice a day is far better than doing one big run at the end of the day, at the end of the week, sorry. So yeah, I think in these patients where we see them, I mean, it does make me giggle inside when they, I mean, yeah. You shouldn't giggle, but it makes you giggle inside. You're like, oh, it's another one.
But it's the, this also plays a role with longevity.
Yeah.
Like when you do something frequently and at a medium or low intensity, you could do it for more years. You could
exactly
like you start doing exercise now. If you do it frequently and at a low intensity, medium intensity, and you don't go like high, you might be able to continue this exercise most probably for the rest of your life, like until you're 60. So if you see some people that are 80 years old and they still,
of course, 90, 100,
and they go for runs, and you're like, how is this person? And then you talk to them, and they're like, I've been doing this every morning since I was 18,
and they've probably built up resilience in doing it very slowly. Yeah. They didn't go straight away. They didn't decide 6 months before that they were going to run a marathon.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
and then started training for it and then suddenly stopped. And then they thought 2 years later, I'm going to do a triathlon. You know, it's a big subject. I'm no specialist in exercise. Yeah. Prescription and knowing exactly coaching in this field, but what I do see is from really, really regularly is patients saying the same thing and they're coming with the same problems, and I'm just thinking, well, there must be something here.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
So that's what I'm basing this all on.
Yeah, no, that's
some
good.
Clinical experience.
Now, and I've seen this as well, like, and I'm sure other people have noticed it. It's not something that let's go to some let's address some misconceptions in osteopathy. So I think we've addressed them all, but let's just go over them. So
please.
Osteopathy, it's not all about bones.
No, although the name is osteopathy, which comes from the Greek. Osteo means bone, and pathy means, well, disease, or you can say suffering.
So the suffering of the bones.
The sufferings of the bone. But I don't think that was the intention behind it. It was sense. I think eventually the etymology, the root of it, became sensitive to bones. And I think that's a bit better, but it doesn't really explain what osteopathy is. Osteopathy, it encompasses the muscles, the ligaments, the viscera, blood supply. We're looking at that as well. I haven't really mentioned, but connective tissues. And you're looking at, and how can we alleviate symptoms through doing that, whether even if the patient has diseases, you know, even if they have conditions, how can we make that condition better? Let me give you an example.
Okay.
COPD.
Let's talk about
so a respiratory condition where someone's got chronic problems with their breathing, asthma, let's say. You may find, okay, I can't cure asthma. That's not what I'm claiming I can do.
No.
But what I'm claiming is, how can I make that person breathe better? Because I know that patient needs to breathe.
Yeah.
So how can I make them breathe better? Now, you may look at their ribs.
Mm-hmm.
You may think, okay, I know that their ribs are connected to their spine at different joints.
Mm-hmm.
And how can I improve the mobility there? What exercises can I give to improve that mobility? What muscles help with breathing? Can I stretch those? what is the pelvis like? Why do I look at the pelvis? Because there's a muscle, there's a massive muscle that connects from the pelvis and the lower back up into the shoulder, and is an it's a secondary respiratory muscle, and you want to try and improve that. So you want to improve the pelvis. You want to help how the bones and ligaments all work together is really key in how that person then can breathe. And then, yeah, go on.
And this doesn't mean that they can't go to a doctor. This means that they have to go to a doctor, and then they complement this with osteopathy.
Of course.
This is the vibe that I'm getting.
Yeah.
You said, I don't know if I'm saying
literally,
correctly, but yeah.
We're not stepping on anyone's toes with osteopathy. Yeah. You're not even stepping on the toes of an physio or a chiro.
It's this holistic care that you said before.
It's taking a step back. I almost see it like a tradesman in a way. I'm trying to put together these clues.
Okay.
And you know, you're trying to find, okay, this person has pain here or can't breathe well.
Mm-hmm.
How can I make them breathe better? Try and find, is this joint working well? Oh, if it is, okay, tick. Let's move on somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then you're trying to put pieces together, and you're, it's a bit of trial and error. You're not really sure, but the patient will tell you. They will say, I didn't feel any better after that treatment. And you'll be like, okay, we'll try something else. And then you try something else. Maybe they don't feel better. After three to five treatments of you trying and there haven't been any improvements, then you're probably going to say, okay, I probably can't help it. after a couple, I think you can still try a little more and then see. But yeah, definitely. You're not trying to say, oh, doctors are... There's no need for them. We're not saying that at all. We're saying the doctors will most often refer, actually. They say, go see an osteopath because they know what we do. And I actually have doctors coming to see me, GPs who are sitting at their desk coming to see me. They're saying, I've sent hundreds of patients to you.
They tell me they're better, so I'll come as well.
Well, exactly. They say they're a lot better. They don't need to take naproxen anymore.
Yeah.
So they're happy. So, you know, it's about... As we said a bit before, working as a team, and that's the best way.
And this holistic approach to the patient, which is amazing. Yeah. We've ticked them all. So it's basically, I was going to say, it's just for back trouble. It's not just for back pain. No. We've explained that they're not the same as chiropractors and physiotherapists. And it's not something newly. It's one of the most, like you said...
Oh, it's not newly
founded. You said it's older than...
Oh, it's been around for about, I think, 1800s. It was around. And the founder was quite an amazing man. He was dissatisfied with the medicine that was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I think his father passed away of cancer and he wasn't happy. And he did a lot of research with cadavers. He used to like really study anatomy, and his principle was, you know your anatomy, you can help somebody if you know your anatomy. Anatomy. That's a big part of the course. if you're thinking of doing osteopathy, it's a massive part of the course.
Yeah.
You learn it inside out, every bone, every landmark on the bone, and it's crazy the amount you learn, but it's worth it, I guess. It's worth it. Going back to what we were saying about, I was talking about the founder for some reason. I can't remember why.
Yeah, we went back when it was founded because it's been here from the 1800s. That's what you said.
Yeah, exactly. And then I think chiropractors branched off. And there was, you know, people who studied osteopathy would then think, actually, no, this is the way to do it. And then the branches came off. So then physio later on, and then physio was more incorporated into the current medicine that we see today.
Yeah. And okay,
that's my understanding of it, at least.
Osteopathy, is it painful?
It is at some time. Yeah, I mean, you don't expect it to be a massage.
Yeah,
you know, it's not
the
always,
cracks. Do they
do the cracks hurt? No, actually, that's quite. Most patients say that's probably the best part of the session. But you know, when we're working on muscles which are tight, and we sometimes need to get we need to be quite strong with those techniques, and we need to create pain. Well, that's not the purpose, but pain is a byproduct of trying to relax that muscle at times. But you know, we do stretching where patients never been stretched before, they've got they got absolute agony because they're like, how do you know where this pain is? And it's not that we know. It's just, you know, you're putting together pieces of a puzzle and you suspect that muscle is going to be tight and it probably.
Yeah.
And probably it is. And it is. And anatomy, patients then feel pain. And they feel pain. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, typically it's not agony. It's not like it shouldn't be agony. It should be, you should feel like you've been worked on and you feel good for it. You should feel good for it. Yeah. You shouldn't feel like you've been beaten up too much. Basically. Yeah,
we've gone through all the misconceptions I wanted to go through. Let's move on to some personal questions to wrap this up.
Okay, so go for it.
So, Nicholas, what are you most thankful for?
I guess I'm most thankful for probably, in a way, coming into this profession. I had an injury, so I guess I'm thankful for that injury. And it sounds stupid, but it made me start thinking, what should I do? And I fell from 15 feet and I injured my pelvis and I had some treatment from an osteopath. And the osteopath said to me, are you sure you want to do it? It's very tough. And I said, yeah, I think I do want to do it. And they were saying, I'm telling you, it's tough. And but I was really I did push for it. And I'm thankful that I had that injury in a way.
To do osteopathy.
And it helps me empathize. Yeah. It helps me empathize with patients who have had car crashes, motorbike accidents, who've had similar injuries and worse injuries. Because I can kind of put myself in their shoes a lot more and motivate them and help them.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I'm thankful for that injury retrospectively now after I've recovered.
What motivates you to work hard?
I don't actually know what it is. I guess it's like a feeling. It's a feeling that motivates you. It's like I guess it's passion, isn't it? It's passion, which it comes down. That's what motivates me personally. How can I help people in this way? And when I see that there's a need for me in society, then that motivates you even more. Yeah. You know, and when you're helping people, and then they say, "Thank you so much, Nick. That really did help me." And you know that does really give you some sort of encouragement to then help more people. And that's really what motivates you. And then you kind of get this drive. I don't know how to say it. This sense of sort of, I don't even know how to put it to words really, but this feeling of wanting more and wanting to help more. And I guess that's what it is. I guess that's what motivates me in a very long roundabout way.
That's beautiful. I think that's what motivates most healthcare professionals.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Hope not money.
So I guess.
Let's go to the last one. What advice would you give to your younger self? And I'll do some slashes here. / somebody who wants to become an osteopath or a healthcare professional.
Don't take life too seriously.
That's a good one. I like that one.
I think if you do...
I like that one.
Yeah, I think you need to just relax as well. You need to
take a holiday to Cyprus.
Yeah, you need to go on holiday. You can probably see my tan. Yeah, so you need to just... I'm a character who would put pressure on. So I would typically push myself to limits that I think are normal, but everyone around me was saying, Nick, you're crazy. Why are you doing that? And then I'd get myself into an anxious state of like, I need to keep pushing.
Mm-hmm.
But for what? There's no reason for doing that. You know, you need to be content with what you have and what you've learned up to that point and be happy. And I think that's what I would have said, because now I look back and I think how silly I was. You know. But yeah, so I think that's what I'd probably say to myself, to my younger self at least, when studying. Because the institution I went to was high pressure. So you needed to perform constantly. I'm sure medics know, if not harder. And maybe it was a blessing that I went to osteopathy and not medicine. But basically, yeah, I would do that. I would probably tell myself that.
I think there's two things I want to say here, but one of them is there's this quote by Socrates which says, the secret to eudaimonia, which is basically happiness, lifelong happiness, is to teach yourself to learn how to be happy with less.
Mm.
That's one quote that I really like by Socrates. And I was going to say something else.
To be happy with less. Yeah, it's true. It's basically the crux of what I was saying. Yeah.
And the other thing I was going to say, which you touched upon, is if you don't do what you just said and you push yourself, and you're gonna reach to a point where to a point where you're not going to be giving the best care and your best self to your patients, and it's counterproductive.
Exactly.
You're going to be doing damage to patients.
Yeah.
Oh, my voice just went.
Yeah. You're
going to be doing damage to patients.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so important. Yeah.
You really need to look after yourself, and because no one will do it for you.
Yeah.
Nobody does it for you. I realize that. No one does it. You think your mom might, but but no one actually truly deep down will care for you the way you can care for yourself. Yeah. You know, and self-care is so important, especially in healthcare.
I need to go find someone who knows about this and like do an episode on this. It's so important. It's been an amazing talk.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me, and sorry for my clumsiness. No,
it was amazing. I think there's some really useful things here, and I'm sure people would benefit a lot from listening to this.
Maybe.
Who can say? They'll say comment.
Comment and subscribe.
Comment, like, and subscribe in the bottom. And okay. tell us if you liked it.
Yeah. Brilliant. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Nigam.
Thank you.